Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at YP Sport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Well, this week saw a week where a number of games up and down the country were called off due to poor weather, as well as the second round of the FA Cup. But for those who were able to take part in league action, we saw Sheffield Wednesday claim an impressive 3-1 victory over Blackburn Rovers. Rotherham United claimed a point when they paid a visit to Birmingham City. Hull City fell to a 2-1 defeat when they welcomed Watford to the MKM. Huddersfield Town had to settle for a point, a late draw against host Swansea City. But first, we will start in the Premier League with Sheffield United, who were thumped 5-0 by a completely dominant Burnley side, and the Blades fell behind within the first 15 seconds of the game, which kind of set the tone for the rest of the game, really. What was your assessment of the game, Stuart?
It was dismal. It was absolutely dismal from a Sheffield United perspective. I'd obviously been at the Bournemouth game the previous week, and you know, we talked on this podcast, they were really slow out the blocks. So the talk, you know, even after that game, never mind before the Burnley game, was how there needed to be a reaction. They needed to start on the front foot in the next game, and it wasn't just the fact that, you know, they needed to show they'd sort of learned the lessons of Bournemouth. It was the fact that this was another one of these mini league games that Leon and I have been talking about all season, the game they really need to take advantage of. They were playing a team that hadn't won a home game all season, hadn't had a clean sheet all season. You know, it was clear exactly what was needed. And they just, as you said, they conceded after 15 seconds. Well, okay, you know, you concede after 15 seconds, but what are you going to do after that? You've still got more than 90 minutes left. And there was just nothing there. They just looked mentally beaten 15 seconds into a game. There was, again, just repeating what I said about the Bournemouth game, there was a real lack of fight. There was a lack of people in the opposition's faces. I don't think it was a lack of effort. I just think it was probably more down to a complete lack of confidence. And it just... Exactly, yeah. It just felt like a game where you just thought, this look... Sometimes, you know, Leon will tell you, you know, we both cover football for a long time. Sometimes you're at a game and it just feels like, well, this is the end for this manager. Mm. And you know, I'm not speaking with hindsight. This is what I wrote at the time in my report in Monday's Yorkshire Post. It just felt like Paul Heckingbottom was done, you know, and it feels really harsh. He's done so much for that football club. You know, it felt really disappointing that he was sacked, but the players just weren't doing it for him in those last two games, which they'd gone into in, you know, should have been in good spirits and all that sort of thing. Everything was there for them to really build on the Wolves and Brighton game. And for whatever reasons, it didn't happen. And you just went away. I mean, you know, Leon texted me when I was on the way home. Even from afar, Leon could sense, you know, he's going to struggle to survive this. It was just, I say, when you've seen a bit of football, you can just tell. And I say it was really sad to say, but that was the sort of performance, say, on the back of the previous one as well, that he was always going to struggle to survive, I'm afraid.
I think deep down as well, Stuart, Paul would have, you know, he's been around the block. He's a big boy. I think deep down in his heart of hearts, he'll have possibly known as well, and certainly, you know, Stuart McCall as well, another one who's, you know, he's been in football for most of his life. It's just sort of some results you just can't survive in a position like and Sheffield United's, and unfortunately, you know, it did look like Saturday was one of those, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you say in his heart of hearts, he wasn't really hiding it in the post match press conference. You know, he said, "I've been and I've said to those players, I can walk away with my head held high." You know, and in hindsight, that resonates even more than it did at the time. But yeah, it was clear from his demeanour that, as you say, he's not daft. He's also been around the game a long time. He knows the deal. You know, he knew when he signed up to it. What he was letting himself in for, but it just had that sort of end of days feel about it. I say it's really sad to see, because you know you feel like it doesn't take into account all the things he's done for that football club the last couple of years. They would have been in a real mess if he hadn't sort of got hold of things, and not only for the football club but for the owner personally, because you know, a couple of recent Sheffield United managers would have had a lot to say about the owner in public, you know, about the way he was let down at times. But he bit his tongue. You know, he's got his no excuses policy, and he was a real human shield for the owner at times. So, you know, when a few fans have been saying the last few weeks, oh, you know, they'd be keeping him on for too long, I think he'd earned that, you know. But I just think it got to the point where it just felt untenable, as Leon says, to him as well as to us, and certainly judging by the way they played, to the players as well. And it's sad to see him go. I hope we see him back soon, at, you know, hopefully at another Yorkshire club, because he's, you know, he's a pleasure to work with from a media perspective, and then, you know, the game's better with people like him working in it. It wasn't about the results, although obviously losing, you know, 8-1 on aggregate to two relegation rivals is a pretty bad result. Mm. It was more the manner of it that was so damaging for him.
Yeah, yeah. And this was then followed by the news that the Blades had parted ways with Paul Heckingbottom, and that Chris Wilder had returned to the club as his successor. Chris Wilder's first game in charge wasn't an easy one, it's fair to say, as it was up against Liverpool and ended in a 2-0 defeat. What did you make of Paul Heckingbottom's time? Obviously, we've spoken about it briefly there, but what do you think about his time, and also how do you feel about the idea that Chris Wilder is now back at the helm at Bramall Lane, Leon?
Yeah, I think Stuart hit the nail on the head about Paul Heckingbottom. You know, he did a sterling job, all things considered, when you look at it in the round and where they were when he took over just over 2 years ago. Obviously brought in Jukanovic. He just didn't work for him, didn't it? And the club had sort of lost a mojo and identity. And, you know, credit to Paul for, you know, they were doing more than steadying the ship. I mean, in the first season, they got to the playoffs, and they were, and I know Stuart did that second leg, and they were very unfortunate, you know, not to get through against Nottingham Forest. And, you know, with Stuart said as well, with Paul, there's been always the backdrop. There's been all sorts of things to contend with, which, I mean, Paul's got a bit of wool on his back in terms of experience, but I think a lot of, you know, even more senior experienced managers would have found it tough. I mean, there was all the ongoing uncertainty about the future of the club. There's been transfer embargoes. There've been, you know, hellish trots with injuries and, you know, COVID things and issues with the training ground, this, that, and the other. So he's had a lot on his plate, and, you know, it shouldn't be forgotten that obviously the start of the season it was always going to be a problematic season. It's not gone the way that anyone would have wished. And, you know, Stuart touched on the fact that, you know, he did feel like a dead man walking after the the Burnley game, but it's, you know, it's important to remember what he's had to sort of face in the background, and also what he did last season. You know, tremendous achievement in getting them promoted back to the Premier League. So I think his place in people will, you know, the Sheffield United supporters will look cast aside sort of what's happened at this first start of the season, which was always going to be difficult, and they'll judge him, you know, in terms of history, pretty fondly. You know, he's among the bracket of managers who've taken them to the Premier League. You know, it was a real strong effort last season. They had plenty to contend with the adversity, and even the form at times, people were sort of thinking they're going to get reeled in by Middlesbrough in particular, but no, they showed a strong jaw and held the nerve. So, you know, it's important to remember what he did, and you know, he's still relatively young, Paul. I'm sure he'll come into Championship Chairman's thoughts, you know, in the new year, with, you know, when managers inevitably change, he's got a promotion on his CV and getting to a playoff semi-final. So, you know, that's pretty impressive and admirable. But yeah, I mean, in terms of bringing Chris Wilder in, it just, I don't know what Stuart thinks, it just seemed to make sense, really. They didn't have too many options. He's someone who knows the club. He knows the club's sort of DNA and what the supporters expect of the football teams. You know, he knows the workings of the club as well. There was quite a bit made at the time of his sacking in, obviously his departure in early 2021, about him falling out with Prince Abdullah, by all accounts, and from what Wilder said in his presser before the Liverpool game, fences have been mended. He spoke of the Prince, you know, meeting him in London, and also, you know, giving him a reference for some of the jobs that he's applied for. He mentioned one, that's Fenerbahce. And so their working relationship is seemingly back on track. And yeah, it just seemed a sensible decision to bring him back. I don't know what you thought, Stuart. The whole point towards that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think if we're going to be brutally realistic about this, if Sheffield United were going to try and find a manager who would definitely keep them up, they'd be looking forever. It's not a situation like Huddersfield were in last season, where you could reach for Neil Warnock and you could say, well, with his knowledge of that division and that squad, you know, he can keep them up. This is a squad that is not resourced for the Premier League. There's going to be no big budget in January. I'm not saying they definitely can't stay up, because there's always a possibility, but it's a big ask. I think the thing, I refer you back to what I was saying about Paul Heckingbottom's team in the last couple of games. The thing is, whether they go down or they stay up, it's got to be with a fight.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yep. Bringing Chris Wilder into that club, it's going to reinvigorate the supporters. It's going to reinvigorate the players. We know what a demanding manager he is. He's not going to stand for people going through the motions in a Sheffield United squad. And in all honesty, I very much doubt Paul Heckingbottom did either. But I just think Heckingbottom had got to the stage where his authority had been so undermined by results that he no longer had that sort of heft to sort of make those threats. Wilder comes in, clearly his stock, Leon's just mentioned about how he's repaired his relationship with the Prince. You know, there were some Sheffield United fans who were still a bit unhappy about the way he left, but I think by and large, Leon can obviously tell you what it was like at Bramall Lane on Wednesday, but I think by and large, they all just want to get behind him and behind the team. So he's a man with the authority to say, look, you're not performing well enough, you know, just to pick a name. Random. I don't want to single the lad out, but you're not performing enough, Luke Thomas. You're not in the team, you know. And he can do that. He can lift the crowd, and I think that's the thing. You know, Leon mentioned in his match report, one of Chris Wilder's favourite phrases is leaving by the front door, not by the back door. And if Sheffield United are to leave this division this season, they've got to do it by the front door. They've got to do it with a bit of pride, because ultimately, if they go down, just frankly pathetically, which is, you know, the best way to describe their performance against Burnley, that will seep into next season. They need something to cling to. And as I say, it's just possible that the stars might align and they might stay up. I'm not totally writing that off, but I think it's so unlikely that it's more about the manner of the performances than the results from here.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what the chief executive said, Stephen Bettison, you know, in a joint press conference ahead of the game. I mean, it'd gone on the record to say that Paul Heggenbottom wouldn't be sacked even if they, Sheffield United got relegated. But, you know, it was just the manner of those two performances in such huge games as well that, you know, prompted a re-evaluation. And, you know, if they're doing that, obviously, Chris Wilder's in the background is someone who knows the workings of the club, and you know, as a first sort of port of call, I'd obviously attended the Liverpool game. Not too many Sheffield United supporters would have been expecting too much, but I think what they would have been certainly expecting is a you know, vastly improved performance, far less passive, in your face, aggressive, and that's what Sheffield United were. It was, you know, all things considered, it was a decent starting point despite the result. Obviously, they lost 2-0, and a half decent PR exercise. I mean, it was welcomed fondly by United Knights ahead of the game. There was a chant of Chrissy Wilder is one of our own. There were chants of Chrissy Wilder and Alan Nil as the game went on in the second half. And in a funny sort of way, it was almost if he'd sort of never been away, really. But yeah, it was. You know, he made some bold changes as well. He brought Andre Brooks in at left back. I think he started a cup game, but it was his first Premier League start, and I thought he was excellent for such a young lad. And he was obviously Mo Salah was up on his side as well, and didn't do that much damage against him. And a few he looked comfortable in a few, you know, forceful probing runs going forward, and he got a standing ovation when he came up in the second half, and applause from Wilder, and you know, Chris isn't the sort to give wanting applause, so he'd certainly earned that. Will Asula got a start up front, and he put himself about. He was physical. He wasn't intimidated, and he had a pretty good game as well. So you know, that was encouraging to see that. But I mean, I suppose the hard thing now for Sheffield United is backing it up. Obviously Wilder's return against Liverpool, and it's in a way it's a little bit of a free hit, I suppose. But you know, Brentford looks quite a big game for them. You know, with respect to Brentford, who are a good side, but they're not Liverpool, are they? And you know, after the game on Saturday, I think they've got back to back away trips to Chelsea and Aston Villa. Obviously, a little bit further down the line at Christmas, another huge game against Luton, and it just looks these two home games that they've got coming up, Brentford, Luton, they'll be needing to, you know, take something from them. And yeah, I mean, Wilder's not giving up the ghost in terms of Sheffield United staying up, and why should he? I mean, he was part of that side in 1990 who were in a far worse position than the current team, and they staged an absolutely astounding recovering, I think, the end of the season in mid-table. I mean, Sheffield United, now that's not going to happen. They'd gladly take 17th. It's, as Stuart said, it's probably is unlikely. They're certainly not going to spend millions in January, but it's by no means impossible either. And, you know, in terms of a start, no points against Liverpool, but as a PR exercise, it was much better after the, you know, the wretched performances that turned up in the previous two games. The fans got back on side a bit, but Wilder's been in the game long enough to know that it's all about Saturday now.
Yeah.
And I just think as well, Mark, you know, the timetable of this has completely spiralled out of Sheffield's control. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't pick when they broke. I mean, it was forced by those two performances, but the timing is pretty good in the sense that, you know, he starts with these three home games in December. As we've said, they were never realistically going to get anything out of the Liverpool game, but it was important to lay a marker with the performance.
to get some ideas in. He'll have a pretty good idea of that squad anyway, you know, because it'll be keeping a close eye for quite some time. But to just get a better feel for it. And then you've got Brendan Luton. I mean, we've been banging on about that on this podcast for so long. It's huge for them. And as Leon says, Brentford is, you know, as well. The fact that they're both at home, I mean, the three away games are horrendous. Chelsea, Aston Villa and Manchester City. If he can get something from those, from both of those games, if he could get something from both, then that would really get a bit of belief. And as Leon says, you just never know. We've seen enough ridiculous escapes over the years that you can never write anything off. And that's the thing. When you've got a manager who has done, you know, ridiculous things with Sheffield United, let's not beat about the bush. Getting the Sheffield United squad he did to ninth in the Premier League was astonishing, you know, and huge credit to him. So someone who did that, they start with that credit in the bank. If you can just get an early result to build belief, and obviously he'll have the benefit of a full Bramall Lane behind him, which he didn't have in that relegation season. That was one of his and the club's big regrets, I think. You just never know. But as I say, like the Liverpool game specifically, I think the season as a whole, it's more about how they play than what the end result is. And it's no disrespect to Paul Heckingbottom at all, because it's almost not to do with him, but I just feel that their chances of getting those results now are better because of the backstory that Chris Wilder brings, plus his skills, plus this, plus that sort of thing. They feel in a better position.
Yeah, you sort of look, just a quick one on that. You sort of look at the bottom of the table, and you know, there's obviously Burnley, Luton, Sheffield United, Everton. You know, I think the narratives have, but it's almost us against the world for all four of them, isn't it, really, for different reasons. Yeah. Obviously, the Everton with the points deduction. But, you know, four teams don't go down, three teams go down. So there's going to be one story somewhere, isn't there, that's going to be remembered at the end of the season. You know, unlikely for Sheffield United, but, you know, let's hope for their sakes that they can provide that story.
Yeah,
and that was the frustrating thing about the last couple of games. You know, if we'd been having this conversation a few weeks ago, Leon would have said five teams, but they've sort of given Bournemouth a leg up. Yeah. They've given Burnley a bit of encouragement. They mustn't do that with Luton Town now.
No.
Obviously, Luton Town have had their own, you know, their own positives to cling to, but, you know, 3 points gift wrapped on Boxing Day would sort of make that even worse. So it's really important that they do stop, you know, giving these teams a bit of encouragement and a bit of momentum, because as Leon says, if you put them under pressure, whether it be Everton or Luton you know, Burnley, if you put them under pressure, you never quite know if they're going to crack. If you give them a goal in the first 15 seconds when they haven't won a home game all season, then they're not under any pressure, are they?
No.
I think it's as well, Stuart, it's what goes before, it's what's before and after it, isn't it? You touched on that, the Chelsea away. They've got Villa away, then they've got the Luton game, and after that, they've got Man City away. So, you know, that adds extra importance on the Luton game, even though there's plenty loaded on it anyway.
Mm. Definitely, And now we turn to the Championship, and we start with Leeds United, who claimed all 3 points in their 3-2 win over Middlesbrough to keep those in the top two on their toes. This victory was Leeds United's seventh straight home victory, the first time they have achieved this feat in the top two divisions for 24 years. However, looking at their opponents for a minute, Michael Carrick's men, who were going into this game with a number of important figures ruled out of contention, now, even though things didn't go Middlesbrough's way, they're still only 3 points off the top six. What was your assessment of the game, and what positives can both managers draw from this result, Leon?
Well, I think the first thing you've got to say is it was wonderfully entertaining. You know, certainly in the first half, especially, there were five goals, and no exaggeration to say that it could easily have been about 5-0 or, you know, 6-0. There was chances that came and went at both ends. Obviously, Middlesbrough shot most of Allen Road, took the lead with a, you know, really good goal from Larte Lath, in front of the South Stand. And, you know, from their perspective, it would have been about, you know, holding on to that for as long as possible. But, you know, for the second successive home game, Leeds hit the straps and, you know, it produced a power play in response. And, you know, they were 2-1 up after 7 minutes, you know, not really seen Dan James or Somerville score many headers in the career, but that's what happened. And, you know, the daft thing is, even before the equaliser, Leeds had a couple of chances to score as well. So it was, you know, it was that sort of first half. And Leeds got 3-1 in front with a penalty from Pirro. And you think, well, there's going to be a little bit of order now from a Leeds perspective. You know, Middlesbrough were struggling in terms of particularly the defensive options, and we'll probably go on to talk about that later. Paddy McNair came off, the senior defender, and Matt Clark came on. I mean, he's an experienced player, but he's been out for 13 months with a back injury, and I think he'd had a late cameo in the previous game at home to Preston. But I think the last place on earth, or certainly in the Championship, that you want to come back after a long injury and you're a bit rusty is Elland Road, and I think within about a minute, given away a penalty. But in keeping with the game, you know, Burrow hit back. Larte, who played well on the Larte Laffer played well on the day with his movement and pace, got a second goal. And the second half was a little bit less eventful, and I suppose managed a little bit better by Leeds. But Middlesbrough still gave them a few scares, and there was, you know, a big chance in the final quarter. Sam Silvera, the substitute, hit the post, and I think it was Morgan Rogers almost put in the rebound with a brilliant block from Joe Rodon, who I thought he kept Leeds together at the back on Saturday. They were a little bit rough, and Pascal Stroik was certainly didn't have the best of first halves, but you know, Rodon stayed strong, and yes, credit to Leeds, a seventh successive win. First time in the top two divisions since 1999. And it was a win. It wasn't without its imperfections, but you know, you take it at this time of year, and I think it's, you know, it's important to give Middlesbrough a bit of credit. They had eight players out, and eight became nine when McNair obviously came off with injury. And you know, the problems are particularly pronounced at the back. They've got quite a few out, you know, senior players, Daryl Lennigan, Dale Fry was also out as well, Tommy Smith. A bit further forward, Hayden Hatney, who we've spoken about on this podcast, you know, one of the, you know, the brightest young midfielders in the division. He was out. Others too, Riley McGree, a few others as well, I believe, forgotten about. So, you know, it was defensively, it was concerning for Middlesbrough. I mean, they conceded three goals in three successive away games. You know, they conceded three at Plymouth and at Bristol City. They've had little sort of spurts of goals as well, conceding one and then two. So that will be a concern for Carrick, and you know, certainly going forward with their availability of defenders as well. I look at the games in December. They've got a big game with Hull. They've got Ipswich on Saturday as well, West Brom. You know, defensively, you just wonder how they're gonna sort of manage that. I think going forward, they're fine. They score goals. They're really pleasing on the eye. It's a little bit risk and reward with the way they pass it out from the back and through the pitch. But you know, they had Leeds worried on Saturday, and in terms of going forward, I think they're as handy as most teams in that division, but it's just a little bit of a worry at the back, and I'm sure they'll be looking to address that in the January window.
Yeah, it just feels like one club in a real rhythm in terms of results, more than, you know, probably more than performances in Leeds United, and Middlesbrough just looking to get back to one, and you know, it's understandable why, you know, Leon's outlined those reasons. But yeah, I mean, I don't feel like Leeds are absolutely in
top gear at the moment, and equally, I don't feel like that's a worry in any way whatsoever, because it's December. They're grinding out wins. You know, they've won, as Leon says, they've won seven on the bounce, and in December, for them in their position, it's just about churning out those performances. And if they don't hit the heights, that's fine, really. So long as they do later in the season. I've been really, really impressed. You know, with Dan James, that's five home games running now, and you know he had a spell at centre forward, didn't he, under Jesse Marsh in his first season. But he feels like in his finishing and his, you know, attacking play, he's actually a much more adept, much more assured finisher now. I just feel like, particularly when he's going through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, I just feel like he's going to score now. Whereas in the past, it was a bit of a toss of the coin. And then, say, to see him scoring headers as well, he's in a really good way at the moment. And when you've got a player like that, I say it can, in that sort of form, it can cover up, you know, the odd crack or two. Not that they're playing badly by any stretch of the imagination, but they're just not at their absolute best right now. Whereas Middlesbrough are just struggling to cover those cracks because, as Leon says, they've got so many defensive injuries, and when you play a high risk game anyway, it can leave you just a bit exposed. And, you know, if you look since they came off that absolutely tremendous run, which sort of kickstarted their season, they haven't won back-to-back games, and it's a really, you know, it's a tough old December for them. As Leon says, it's Ipswich and Hull in consecutive home games. Well, that's no let up, really. Next away games at Swansea, who knows? You know, you'd have taken Swansea of last week, but with a new manager coming in, exactly, you just don't know what's going to happen there. Obviously, West Brom have been in great form, had that disappointment against Leicester, but nevertheless, Carlos Corgram has kick-started them. And then finishing the month away at Rotherham and Huddersfield, who, you know, are almost guaranteed to make life very difficult for them. Absolutely. on their own patches. So it's a tough period for Middlesbrough, and, you know, they've just got to, for both teams, it's just a case of sort of grinding through at the moment and just coming out of it strongly. I say more so for Middlesbrough, really, because of all those absentees. But, you know, at least that Leeds game showed what is there, you know, in terms of if you can score a couple of goals at Elland Road, if you can cause those problems, as Leon says, nearly score more. There's clearly no cause to lose too much heart. It's just a matter of finding a way in some of those games. Maybe once or twice they might just have to tone down the risk element just a little bit, just to sort of grind their way through one or two. But it's certainly not desperation times. It was the kind of result. Say Leon obviously saw the whole game. I just saw the result and the highlights. It's kind of a result that makes you think, well, probably both teams can take something from that day, and hopefully that proves to be the case.
Yeah, it's probably a decent lesson in some respects for Leeds. Do you want to know? You know, they've been having plenty of their own way at Elland Road, and obviously ultimately on Saturday they won, but they were challenged on Saturday, and they had to sort of dig a little bit deeper, and so they found a way and won the game at the end. And, you know, the thing that we've mentioned before, the thing that augurs well for Leeds, that the games are coming thick and fast, is what they've got at the disposal on the bench. You know, people like Jadon Ansa to come on. We've hardly seen Jed Spence since he's been back in the fray. There's, you know, the Coopers, there's, you know, Bamford. So they're very well stocked in that regard. I'll still be interested to see what they do in January. I just wonder if it's just a different face as well up front, bringing a new option in. That might be something that'll consider. I still wonder about Gonta, whether he'll sort of want to get away in the new year, maybe to boost his hopes with Italy down the line in the summer. You know, that's for the future in the here and now. Leeds have got some, you know, we mentioned Middlesbrough, we've got some big games, and, you know, invariably most clubs do at this time of year, and you know, certainly Leeds have them. Now they've got a huge one against Ipswich just before Christmas, which that looks a real cracker. And I don't discount an away game against West Brom as well before the year's out. You know, West Brom have been doing really well of late, and he's a shrewd operator, Carlos Corberan, and I think that will really test Leeds as well. So, but yeah, I think plenty to look forward to for Leeds. And you know, at the end of the day, Saturday was one of those occasions. It was, you know, it was a really good game, and Leeds found a way, and that's what good sides do.
And we were talking about the upcoming games that Leeds have got, and how some of them seem to be quite big ones. The next one is, I believe, against Blackburn at Ewood Park, I'm interested to see what Leeds will provide for us there, because I believe that the Blackburn manager is due to serve a touchline ban, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what performance we get from Leeds against the Blackburn Rovers side at the current stage of the season.
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, Blackburn are coming off the back of a pretty surprised defeat at Sheffield Wednesday. They've obviously got one of the division's form players in Smodic at the minute. He's scoring goals left, right, and centre. But yeah, they've certainly had the moments, Blackburn this season. But I think the narrative as well on Saturday, they're going to have 7,000 Leeds fans there, who will give it a bit of a home element. And I'd be interested to see how Blackburn cope with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this time of year, you know, the opposition is only a small part of the equation, really. You know, for Leeds, it's as much the fact that, you know, the way that Southampton have been performing recently, already mentioned the way that West Brom have been performing recently, the fact that Ipswich are holding their nerve, you know, the fact that Leicester have got this head start. It creates an atmosphere where there isn't that much, you know, you'll have the odd wobble, but there isn't that much scope to
join the minute. Yeah.
Exactly, you know, to have too much. And that's what's been good about Leeds. You know, they made hard work of it in the first half against Swansea, but they got the job done. You know, they should have dealt with Rotherham more comprehensively in the first half, but when they came under pressure in the second, they got a draw. You know, there is a pretty impressive consistency about them right now, and a sort of they're very unflappable, which is important when I say other teams are either breathing down their neck or just staying ahead in the distance, and that means that, you know, they could be playing a team near the bottom of the league right now, but still there's that pressure on from the other sides. And as we say, actually, the teams are playing, they've got some pretty formidable games coming up, but games which Leeds fans should be really looking forward to, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, it's got the makings of an intriguing race, isn't it, for automatic promotion. You put it, you know, Leicester won on Saturday, Ipswich won, Southampton and Leeds. So there's going to be that added element to it at the minute. Yeah, it looks 2-4, doesn't it? So. It just makes it all the more intriguing as the games come thick and fast at this period of the season. And Leeds have just got to make sure that they're well in there by the time the new year begins.
And staying in the Championship, I wanted to get your thoughts on our Yorkshire sides in and around the drop zone in this division, as we currently have Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham United in the bottom three. And the gap between them and safety seems to be getting bigger and bigger every week. But we also have Huddersfield Town, who are just keeping their heads above water. What do you make of it all? And are there signs of much fight coming from any of these sides, Stuart?
I think Sheffield Wednesday is an interesting one for me, because obviously Leon and I sort of dip in and out of these teams. We don't see them on a regular basis. But all the sort of moon music coming from Sheffield Wednesday has been that performances have been better than results. And I spoke to Akin Fomeo on Thursday and talking to him a bit about how there seems to be a lot of important building work being done at Sheffield Wednesday that should come to fruition in the long term, you know. And it felt like the Blackburn win,
you know, on the back of a draw against Leicester City, had the real potential to be that lift-off point for them. But of course, we'll only know that when we see if they followed it up at Stoke and Norwich and the games to come. And of course, the other question is, I think they're now, is it 10 points adrift of safety? It's a question of, you know, will this spark come soon enough to keep them safe? But it definitely feels as though there's some positive things going on behind the scenes in Sheffield Wednesday. At Sheffield Wednesday, I think I wrote in a piece recently, they just need to tell the league table about it. Encouragement there. In terms of Huddersfield, I mean, you know, Leon talked a bit of length last week about the real grit we've been seeing from them recently. And, you know, a lot of the problems that Leon mentioned with Middlesbrough in terms of, you know, absentees and what have you, Huddersfield are suffering similar problems at the other end of the field, but they really seem to be digging in. And again, that seems to be a manager who has laid a bit of groundwork and it's taken a bit of time, but hopefully it's coming to a bit of fruition. Rotherham still in flux, and you know, I've been saying about Rotherham for a long time, it depends whether you see them at home or away as to whether you think they've got a chance of staying up or they've got no chance whatsoever. But the fact that they managed to get a draw at Birmingham City, you know, that's double their points tally away from home for the season. Hopefully that can give them a bit of confidence. Hopefully that will soon be built on by a new manager with some fresh ideas and just the sort of things we're talking about Chris Wilder providing in terms of someone with a track record, someone who's been there before, who players can have confidence in. So, you know, certainly all is not lost for them either. I think all three of those teams are showing encouraging signs. I think the worry for the, you know, for the bottom two, Rotherham and Sheffield Wednesday, is just how much of a head start they've given the rest. But, you know, even 10 points at this stage of the season is not insurmountable. When you think about it, that's three wins and a draw, you know, over the course of the next sort of 27 games, it's possible to make that up. But in terms of Wednesday in particular and Rotherham as well, you know, they need to get to it sooner rather than later, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you Stuart, sort of bang on what he said there. I think looking at Wednesday and Rotherham in particular, the big issue there is away form, isn't it? I mean, I think Wednesday have only got a point so far this season, and as Stuart said, Rotherham have got two, obviously doubling the tally with a draw at Birmingham. If they're going to be both realistic about survival, it's got to incrementally improve, hasn't it? Else, you know, they'll be putting far too much pressure on the home form. But, you know, fair play to Wednesday. A great win against Blackburn. I think they've only lost one in five now at home. Obviously got that real gutsy draw against Leicester, which I suppose not so many will have been predicting that beforehand. And that will have sort of felt like a win, wouldn't it, in respect of how it happened coming at the end. And, it seems to be that Danny Rowe's making a bit of a difference. He's resonating with the players. They've all spoke extremely highly of him, of his work, innovative work on the training ground. So they've got themselves a little bit of help. Rotherham, they'll need, obviously, it's become a bit of a saga, hasn't it, really, regarding the manager situation there with, you know, one or two turning the position down. They'll be desperate for some sort of new manager bounce. You know, looking at the you know, there is sort of elements of hope, as Stuart said. More especially, it's arrived at home, hasn't it? From you know, factoring in Huddersfield as well, and they've got two home games coming up against Bristol City and Preston. They've had two, decent points. All it could have been more, couldn't it? Because they obviously were pegged back in the last minute at Swansea. But you know, 4 points on six on the road is handy going into back to back home games. Had a little look earlier, and Town and Rotherham. I think they've got four of the next six at home, so that's something that could hopefully get their teeth into onto sort of Huddersfield. They, you know, they've got back to basics. I spoke before, they had those, you know, psychologically heavy and damaging defeats they had to Cardiff and Leeds. Went back to basics, three centre halves and sort of five at the back. Become more organised and resolute, and they've, you know, they've certainly done that. They're sharing the load around in terms of the performances there. The back three are playing well. Chris Maxwell's come in into the side in goal, and he seems to have been a calming presence. David Kasuma's had a few back to back games, and he's been looking good by all accounts. Sober Thomas has got his mojo back, and his work ethic's been outstanding of late. And, you know, there's players there who are putting their hands up, and I think in short, three of them have given themselves a little bit of an inkling of hope. But, you know, so have others. You know, look at the QPR; they've had a good result at was it Preston, wasn't it? And if they can turn around their sort of dire home form, they'll be thinking they can pull themselves out of it. So there's plenty to play for.
Yeah, yeah. And finally for this week, we turn to our team and player of the week. This week, I'll be looking to Leon for his team of the week before going to Stuart for his player of the week. Leon, who has caught your eye this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I suppose, a little bit of a toss-up between, you know, Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday. See, Huddersfield had back-to-back away games. You know, I think you sort of factor in as well, they went to Sunderland on a Wednesday night, and then they've had a quick turnaround and a long away trip to Swansea. You know, that brings its own sort of issues, logistics, everything you want, really. You know, to take 4 points, and it could easily have been six, was a pretty impressive effort from Darren Moore's side, and you know, credit to them. But I think if I had to push comes to shove, I think you have to go for Sheffield Wednesday. Obviously, they'd lost the previous three matches heading into the Leicester game. They got walloped at home to Millwall, and then you know, psychologically, you know, a bad result, losing away to Birmingham. Birmingham haven't been on the best of form since Wayne Rooney's come in, and I think on the quiet Wednesday they'd have been, you know, targeting that one and fancying the chances. So yeah, they had two sort of blows for different sorts of reasons to come back, get a impressive point against Leicester, and then go again and beat a dangerous Blackburn side. So that probably for the first time this season, I'd say Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, and in terms of the player, you know, I was looking in the same direction, and it was, you know, it was really good to see Bailey Cadamarshi score his first goal in senior football. That's clearly, you know, important to him, should do his confidence a lot of good. He's come in and performed very well so far for them, but it makes a difference, I think, when you get that first goal. But it was Josh Windass who set that one up, and it was him who scored the third goal that just secured that win against Blackburn Rovers. So I'd go for him as my player of the week, because this has the potential to be a really big win for Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah, and I mean, we'll only truly be able to say that if they are able to back it up. But you can't underestimate the importance of getting those 3 points on the back of that Leicester draw. And hopefully Sheffield Wednesday fans can look forward with a bit more optimism than they were doing even a couple of weeks ago.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wapshall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.